This program does not create an attorney-client relationship between Moss and Barnett, a professional association, or any attorney appearing on this program and any caller or listener. Please remember that we can only give general information, and every case is unique. Always check with your individual attorney for any specific legal concerns. If you are in need of specific legal advice or are looking for an attorney, please do not hesitate to give Moss and Barnett a call at 612-877-5000.
This is WCCO's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
Thanks so much for joining us. At least the sun is shining today. Otherwise, a little chilly for the program today. Our host, Tom Schroyer, in studio. Marcy Frost is back, third time on the program. Welcome, Marcy.
Thank you.
Yes, Marcy is the first third-time guest, I believe, of Moss and Barnett. She was on early with a show about USERRA and then again about talking about employment law last January, and now today about talking again about employment law. This time, Steve will be going over quirks in Minnesota employment law, kind of some fun things, but also some very important and interesting, unique aspects of Minnesota employment law. Before we do that, though, let me introduce Marcy again as a shareholder at Moss and Barnett, who focuses her practice on employment law. And Marcy was a graduate of the University of Minnesota Law School, where she was recognized for her achievements as by admission to and honoring through the Academic Honorary Society of the Order of the Coif, a huge prestige for a law student. And Marcy also is the winner of the Paul Van Valkenburg Award for Community Service as a lawyer. Steve, that includes community service by Marcy as a director of the really heralded Families Moving Forward organization, which she also coordinates at her synagogue. She is a member or volunteer ombudsman for the employer support for Garden Reserve and is on the boards of the local, district, and international Women of Reform Judaism Society, an organization of 50,000 people. So, Marcy, congratulations, and thank you for all of that community and volunteer work.
Thank you.
Marcy also, Steve, is the mother of two children and married, lives in St. Paul. So, Marcy, you put together some fun topics for us today. Let's start with just a general overview, if we might, of Minnesota employment law, how it fits into the picture, and, you know, in what ways generally is it different?
Well, all states have their own employment laws. There's also a lot of federal laws. The thing about Minnesota is it is on – overall, it is an employee-friendly state, and there are some unusual things in Minnesota. So employers who are working or running businesses in Minnesota and other states need to be very aware of what's going on in Minnesota's law, because it may be different from the surrounding states and other states in the country.
As I understand it, I've done enough employment law to be dangerous, but it's a very complex area. It's governed by a web of statutes and at the federal and state level, and also regulations. And then, of course, you have the courts making decisions that are an overlay to all of that.
That's right. And sometimes the court decisions are difficult to tie back into the statutes and regulations and see how they fit together. And there's areas that are completely based on the court decisions.
And I know we were talking before the show. I mean, I get some of my best medical advice from Dr. Internet, but you had done some research for the show that led you to believe that the Internet might not be such a fail-safe way to get information, at least not about employment law.
Right. I was looking at one of the laws that we were going to talk about today, which is Minnesota's tip pooling law or sharing of gratuities. And I had the statute in front of me and I had the regulations in front of me, but I wanted to see if I could find anything else on it. And I went on to the internet and did a search, and I came up with some blog or something, and a human resources director had answered somebody's question and had given information that I didn't see in the statute and I didn't see in the regulation. And I started worrying that maybe there was something I was missing. I called the Minnesota Department of Labor and told them what I knew and told them what I found, and they told me that what I knew was what was right, was what was in the statute and the regulations, and the information on the internet was completely unfounded.
So buyer beware in terms of coming up with legal advice on the internet.
Yes.
And in regard to that statute you mentioned, that or that law, tip pooling, is that a quirk of Minnesota law?
It's a fairly unusual law. Some other states have it, but oftentimes it's limited to prohibiting employers from requiring employees to share their tips with their supervisors.
So this applies to restaurant workers or hotel workers and the like?
Correct. But in Minnesota, it prohibits an employer from requiring direct service employees to share their tips with indirect service employees.
So if I'm the wait person and I get a tip, does that include on a credit card?
Yes.
And if I'm waiting at a table and I get a tip, the employer cannot force me to share that tip with people who provide support behind me.
Correct. The cooks, the bartenders, the busboys. That it does not prevent you from voluntarily sharing your tips. And it doesn't prevent the bartender for letting you know in uncertain terms that if you don't give them a tip, you're not going to get your drinks anytime soon. But it does prevent the employer from telling you that you are required to share your tips with the other staff.
Now, what about the poor dishwasher Steve in the back? Isn't he entitled to any tips? Or Jim, the busboy?
Right. It's the same concept. Only if the employee voluntarily does that.
I see.
The employer cannot have a system in place that requires all of the tipped staff to share their tips with the other people. The employees can band together to form that decision. And as I said, the bartender and the cooks and busboys might have a little bit of influence. The dishwasher, it's pretty hard to say I'm going to wash somebody's dishes and not yours. That's not the way it works. So it's a commonly disregarded law. I think mandatory tip sharing does go on. The law specifically says that it does not prevent employees from voluntarily doing it, but the employer cannot be involved at all in that decision.
I imagine there are some fine lines that come into play in that regard, however. And what about the situation where there's a mandatory service fee that's imposed by the restaurant or the caterer on a tab? Is that a part of this law?
Yes. What that says is that unless the employer conspicuously posts something that says that this is not a gratuity, then it is treated like a tip in general.
And so that when I pay the mandatory service fee, if that's what it is, I can be assured that the wait person, the professional behind the service, is actually getting the credit of a tip.
Right. Now, there is one other distinction, and that is when you have multiple direct service providers. So, for instance, there's a restaurant in town where people walk around and offer you food, and they offer it to me at my table, and they offer it to somebody else at this table, and they offer it across the room, and you'll have five people offering it to you. It's okay for those people to share tips with each other.
We have more on the program. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Marcy Frost is in studio. Tom Schroyer, the host. Quirks of Minnesota Employment Law. If you have a question or comment for the program, call us 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. You can text the studio anytime as well. 81807. Send your text to 81807. Once again, Minnesota Law on a Saturday on 830 WCCO. Minnesota Law continues on a Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon, each and every Saturday at noon here on News Radio, 830 WCCO. Tom Schroyer is our host. Marcy Frost is in studio. Quirks of Minnesota Employment Law. Before the break, we talked about tips. We're going to go to the phones right now. By the way, I have a tip for you, 651-989-9226, or you can text the studio at 81807. That's 81807. We'll start with Tim in St. Paul. Tim, you're on the air. Hello. Tim. All right. We'll try Sharon. Sharon, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, good morning, or afternoon. I have a question in regard to layoffs and the time that an employer has to wait before a second layoff can occur. I had heard something about that if it's within a specified amount of time that they would be considered, the second layoff would be part of the first, so that there'd be other papers that would need to be signed or whatever, and just wondering what that, if that is a true fact, and also what is that length of time?
Well, I think what you're referring to is the WARN Act, which is actually a federal law that requires employers to give notice of a layoff and or a plant closing if it affects a certain number of people. And there is a timing issue on that as to how close in time two different layoffs can occur before they are considered separate. And
so, Marcy, as you're looking for that, that was a federal law, and I see you looking through the statute book. That would be different than Minnesota law, though.
Correct.
Minnesota law does not have such a requirement?
Well, actually, Minnesota law does have a statute that follows the federal law. So if you are required, if an employer is required to give advance notice of a layoff under the federal law, there's additional information that they have to give under Minnesota law. But they don't have to give the information under Minnesota law unless they have to give it under federal law. And it's a 90-day period in which they can start at, where you can aggregate the layoffs.
And so that there has to be 90 days between layoffs in order to take care of the or comply with the...
Yeah, if you have multiple layoffs within a 90-day period, you count them all together.
I see. All right. Very good. Thank you. We want to thank the listener for calling and, of course, encourage other folks to do so or to text us here, as Steve points out. Marcy, when we were getting ready here for the program, one of the real conundrums I thought that we talked about was Minnesota's Drug and Alcohol Testing in the Workplace Act, which is a mouthful in and of itself, but it does seem to really be kind of, frankly, counterintuitive to me.
Yes, it is an unusual law. It is not unusual that Minnesota has a drug testing law. Many states do. And basically what the laws in general say is employers are not required to conduct drug and alcohol testing on their employees. But if they choose to do so, they must do it in compliance with the statute. And the thing that is very unusual about Minnesota's statute is a rule that prohibits employers from terminating somebody's employment based on a positive drug or alcohol test if it is the first time that that individual has tested positive for that employer. The employer cannot terminate their employment until they have given the person the opportunity to go through rehabilitation or treatment, and the person has either refused to do that or has failed to complete it successfully. So the interesting thing is, if the employer is an at-will employer, or if it's an at-will employee, which most people are, they don't have an employment contract that guarantees them employment for a certain amount of time or conditions on the reasons they can have their employment terminated, then the employer can terminate them for any reason they want, as long as it's not discriminatory or violating other laws. But gosh, you seem like you're high would be one of those reasons. But if the employer decides, you know what, maybe they're just really tired and their eyes are red and that's really bad perfume, so we're going to give them a drug test so that we don't terminate their employment unless they really are high, and the drug test shows that they were high. Now the employer has to let them go to treatment. If the employer had just acted on their gut instinct instead of doing the testing, they would have had the opportunity to terminate the person's employment.
And so, as I understand at-will employment, it means that I, as an at-will employee, can be fired for any reason, for a bad reason or for no reason.
As long as it's not an illegal reason. And so it can't be because of your protected classification, because you're a certain age or physical condition or race or something like that, or because you complained about an illegal activity in the workplace.
Well, sure, but now take this drug and alcohol use situation to another level. Let's say you have somebody who you believe is an alcoholic or chemically dependent, let's say. What rules come into play then?
Well, then you need to be careful of the disability discrimination law. You cannot terminate somebody's employment because you believe they are an alcoholic, but you can terminate their employment if you think they're drunk.
All right, we have more coming up. It is Quirks in Minnesota Employment Law. Marcy Frost is our guest attorney today. Tom Troyer, host on the program. You can call the program at 651-989-9226, or you can text the studio at 81807. That's 81807. Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, here on News Radio 830 WCCO. Thanks so much for joining us. Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, each and every Saturday at noon. Tom Schroyer is our host, joining us in studio today. Marcy Frost, Quirks of Minnesota Employment Law. The phone number on the program is 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. You can text the studio as well at 81807 if you have a question about employment law. Before the break, we were talking about drug testing in the workplace. Can an employer come into the office on Monday morning and say, I had an epiphany over the weekend. I want everybody tested for drugs. Is that legal?
Not in Minnesota, it's not. There are only certain circumstances in which an employer can do drug testing. First of all, they would have to have a written policy in place. That would be one step. And then assuming they have the policy in place, they can only do testing on job applicants as part of a routine physical examination, random testing, but only for safety-sensitive positions, reasonable suspicion testing, treatment, post-treatment testing. So if you've sent somebody to treatment, then you can do testing to follow up on them. But a general, I want everybody in the company tested, does not fall within the statute.
All right, we go to the phones. Tim in St. Paul, you're on the program. Minnesota Law. Thanks, Tim.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. In Minnesota, these days when there's employees or employers downsizing and laying people off, a lot of them offer severance packages where you sign a voluntary resignation and you agree to forego any claims against the employer. In Minnesota, if an employee has an active work comp injury, how do these agreements not to sue affect those sort of claims?
They would not affect it. You cannot waive a workers' compensation claim in that kind of a release. The workers' compensation board needs to get involved in order to waive that kind of claim. So it would not be waived, although my recommendation would be that you request specific language to be in the agreement just so that you don't have to worry and argue about it.
Minnesota has a quirk about releases of employment law claims, though, doesn't it, Marcy?
Yes, it does. It's the only state that I'm aware of that has a rescission period.
What does that mean now?
What that means is after the person has signed the release saying, I won't sue you for anything, they have 15 days in Minnesota to change their mind and rescind the release of their Minnesota Human Rights Act claims. Now, there's a similar rescission period under the federal age discrimination law in which a person needs to be given 7 days to rescind. But there is no rescission period under the federal Title VII, which covers race and religion and national origin and gender. And there is no such rescission period under the federal disability discrimination laws.
Well, so if an employer comes to me and says I'm terminated and here is a bonus payment or a severance payment if I sign a release, do I have a certain amount of time to think it over before I sign it? And is that on top of the rescission period that you just mentioned?
Well, interestingly, the Minnesota Human Rights Act does not have a review period. Again, that same federal law that gives you 7 days to rescind requires an employer to give you either 21 or 45 days, depending on the circumstances, to review the agreement before you sign it. There is no such provision in the Minnesota Human Rights Act. The rescission period kicks in after you've signed it.
So do I get the benefit of both of those laws read together then, both on the front end in terms of the time I get to decide whether to take it or not, and then at the backside after I sign it to rescind?
Yes. If your employer is covered by the Age Discrimination and Employment Act, which would basically be if they have 20 or more employees, and you are over 40, and they are asking you to release claims under the age discrimination law and under the Minnesota Human Rights Act, you'd get your 21 or 45 days on the front end, which means they give you the agreement and you have 3 weeks to think about it before you have to sign it. And then once you sign it, you would have the 15 days under the Minnesota Human Rights Act to rescind those claims under the Minnesota Human Rights Act.
Is it possible for an employer to make one offer and say, if you don't sign today, this offer could change? Is that possible, that someone could say, well, I've got this thing and they wanted me to sign it today, and if I didn't, I'm worried it could change going forward?
If you are covered by the federal age discrimination law and they're asking you to waive your federal age discrimination claim, and they said sign it today or it's going down by half, that they can do that. And if you choose to sign it, it is probably not going to be an effective waiver of your federal age discrimination claim.
So the risk would still be on the employee to suffer the discounting on the payment, or maybe even have the offer pulled off the table altogether. And the only risk for the employer then is that they might be sued later for age discrimination.
I've never thought about it that way, because typically once an employer offers it to you, they offer it to you because they want to. And you probably get into some issues of basic contract law when you've made an offer and told them it's open for 21 days. You can't necessarily pull it.
It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Burnett here on 830 WCCO. Tom Scheuer, Marcy Frost in the studio. We go to the phone. Sue in Maple Lake, you're on the program. Hello, Sue.
Hi. I just had a question on sort of what the previous caller had. I'm currently on workers' comp. I was hurt at work, and I was laid off. And my employer told me that I would get a two-week bonus, but that would run concurrent with being on workers' comp. Are they allowed to do that?
They said that they would pay you a two-week bonus.
And our severance pay package.
A severance pay, and so it's reducing the workers' comp you're getting. Is that what you're saying?
What I'm asking is, because I'm on workers' comp, can they just say, okay, you're on workers' comp for another 2 weeks, so therefore I don't have to give you a bonus?
If they have a severance policy or plan, or you have a contract that requires you to get severance, I wouldn't think they could do that. In general, employers aren't required to give you severance.
We might also add, I think, Marcy, it would be fair to say that workers' comp laws are really another whole area of the law, and really the workers' or employees' rights under workers' comp are really quite well established and are protected fully by the workers' compensation court system, under which employees cannot give up rights unless the court approves of the settlement or the release.
Right. Yeah, it is actually a whole nother specialty of the law.
All right, we have Tim in Minneapolis. Tim, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, I got a question regarding salary. I was on salary last year, and my employer decided to give us, or not give us, but have a couple of mandatory days off. And I didn't get paid for those days. And I'm just wondering, being on salary, is that correct?
Well, that would depend. There's a common misunderstanding of what it means to be on salary and what it means to be exempt under the wage and hour laws. In order to be exempt under the wage and hour laws, you have to meet three different tests, one of which is you're paid on a salary basis, but the other has to do with your job duties, and another has to do with the amount of the salary. If you were truly an exempt employee under the Fair Labor Standards Act and the Minnesota component or Minnesota counterpart to it, then the employer saying don't come in on Monday and Tuesday and we're going to reduce your salary would be problematic. That would not be the right way of approaching that issue.
Now, final paychecks get into a whole nother situation under Minnesota law, don't they?
Minnesota has a somewhat strange law regarding final paychecks, and that is most states will say the employer has to give the person the final paycheck by, within 24 hours or 48 hours or something like that. Minnesota only requires the employer to pay within 24 hours of a demand by the employee. So the employee has to make the demand first, but then it's 24 hours. You make the demand at 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon, it's due 5 o'clock Saturday, or a penalty starts ticking away.
It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. We're talking employment law today. Marcy Frost in studio. Tom Scheuer is our host. We come your way each and every Saturday at noon. We go to John in Maple Grove. John, you're on the program. Hello.
Hi. I have a question about sick time. We get paid for our sick time, but then we get taken off our review. We get kind of punished for it on our review.
And your question is whether that's okay?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, an employer is not required to provide you with paid sick leave, and if they choose to do that, They can tell you that we expect you to save this for real emergencies and we don't want you to abuse the system. I actually, in my first full-time job, had the same issue. I knew I was only there for a year and I was going to use up my sick leave, and they were surprised that I was sick as often as I was.
So you didn't have to go to law school to get that one figured out.
Yeah.
Now, what about employers that have rolled sick time into vacation time? They've the blanket paid time off.
That is a common way of doing things. Employers need to be careful about those policies, because you don't want to just have a blanket PTO policy. You have, you know, 25 days to use in the year for any way you want, because then you end up people with a lot of people saying, "Oh, it's sunny out today and it's warm and I'm going to go golf," and calling in. So the employer wants to have a policy that says that, you know, you have to request it a certain amount of time in advance, and if you don't request it in advance, then it can only be used for sick for purposes of illness or, you know, emergencies. Pipe exploded this morning. I need to stay home for the plumber kind of thing.
What about other kinds of leaves? Are there some benefits under Minnesota law that are independent of what the employer gives and, in fact, the employer must give according to state law?
Yes, there are both paid and unpaid leaves required under Minnesota state law. Like most states, Minnesota requires employers to give time off for people to vote, but Minnesota's voting law has some quirks in it. First of all, it only relates to state elections. It's not applying to a local election. And also, Minnesota does not require that the person be unable to vote outside working hours. Most states say you can vote during working hours and get paid for it, but only if there's insufficient time to vote while the polls are open when you're not working. Minnesota doesn't have that requirement. The other paid leave law in Minnesota is another kind of quirky one, and that is paid leave for donating bone marrow. I originally thought that it was strange that we had a bone marrow law at all, but in researching it, it turns out that a lot of states have it. It's because the Cancer Society has a strong lobbying arm. But Minnesota is only one of two states that requires private employers to give paid bone marrow leave. The other states, it's either unpaid leave, or if it's paid leave, it's only for public employees.
We have more on the way. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Burnett. Joining us in studio today, Marcy Frost. Tom Schroyer is our host. The topic, quirks of Minnesota employment law. We have some phone lines open right now at 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. Or you can text the studio at 81807. That's 81807. Minnesota Law on 830-WCCO. We'll be right back. We continue Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, available online at moss-barnett.com. Each and every Saturday at noon here on CCO, Tom Schroyer, our host, Marcy Frost, is in. Quirks of Minnesota Employment Law. We've had a number of great phone calls on the program today, and we're receiving some texts. We'll go to Scott in Blaine. Scott, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello. You mentioned about time off for voting, and the way we understood that law is that we have to allow people time off to vote without penalty of wage or that. But it doesn't necessarily say that we have to pay them for that time off, because we allow people to take time off to vote, and we're open later so they can make up that time. Or they don't have to make up the time, they just don't get paid for it. So I guess I'm wondering what your interpretation of that is.
Well, the way it's written is that it has to be without penalty or deduction from salary or wages. So I think allowing them to work other hours may be okay, but telling them you can take time off, but if you take time off, you're not going to get paid could be problematic.
We had a text in the studio we want to get to real quick. Someone was wondering, when I was fired, I had over 30 paid time off hours that I hadn't used. Should I be getting paid for those?
And the answer to that depends on what the employer's policy is. That this was an issue that's kind of waffled back and forth under Minnesota law, but it was resolved by the court a year or two ago. And that is if the what they consider to be the contract between the employee and the employer regarding vacation pay states that it is forfeited upon termination of employment or forfeited upon certain reasons for termination of employment, then that's enforceable. If the policy says that you get paid it when you leave, or even if it is silent on that issue, then you would be entitled to if it's a combined PTO, vacation and sick together, you'd be entitled to it. If a vacation and sick are separate, there is not an entitlement to the sick, but there would be to the vacation, unless the contract between the employer and the employee, the policy basically states otherwise.
We go to the phones again. Fred in Hastings, you're on Minnesota Law. Hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question on overtime pay for hourly union and non-union employees. I work with a large company that up until recently paid both hourly and not union and non-union employees overtime after 8 hours work time during the day. And recently they changed that policy to require non-union hourly employees to work 40 hours per week before they get overtime pay. And you couldn't combine that working time with PTO time for the 48. It had to be actual worked hours. Can you tell me if there's any kind of federal or state law regarding overtime pay?
First of all, if you've got a collective bargaining agreement that requires overtime payments that aren't required by the law, you need to abide by your collective bargaining agreement. For your non-union employees, the law is it's under federal law, 40 hours of overtime in a work week. If you work more than 8 hours in a day but less than 40 hours in the work week, there is no requirement under federal law or Minnesota state law for an overtime payment. There are some states that do have daily overtime, but Minnesota does not, and the federal law does not. And PTO is not considered time worked. So when we say you worked more than 40 hours in a week, that's actual hours of work. If you took a vacation day of 8 hours and then you worked 40 hours the rest of the week, when you're paying overtime at 40 hours, there would be no overtime because you only actually worked 40.
Say, Marcy, as long as we're talking about paychecks and compensation, are there any Minnesota quirkiness, or is there any Minnesota quirkiness, I should say, around employers dinging employees or taking deductions from them for various thises and thats?
Yes, there's a law that limits an employer's right to make deductions from paychecks. And basically, the debt that is owed from the employee to the employer cannot be recouped by the employer by taking a deduction from the paycheck unless the employee authorizes it voluntarily after the debt has incurred. Unless it's a situation where they're either purchasing something from the employer or they are borrowing from the employer, then they can sign something in advance. But if, for instance, the employer allows you to take more PTO than you've actually earned, and then when your employment terminates, you haven't earned it back, they can't just deduct it from your paycheck unless after you took the vacation you signed something voluntarily saying you can deduct it.
Boy, the hour has just flown by, Marcy. You've covered a lot of ground, and we picked up some really terrific questions. Did you have fun putting this program together for us?
Yes, it was interesting. Put a lot of time into it.
Oh, very good. Well, we'll look forward to having you back because we have, Steve, literally just scratched the surface on the quirkiness of Minnesota employment law.
And she's already been a three-time guest, and I would assume very soon a four-time guest.
Exactly right, Steve. Thanks
so much.
Trying to
set a record.
Next week, Steve, we're going to have back Susan Rode, who will be discussing with you one-on-one the rights of and legal challenges of grandparenting in Minnesota, an emerging and very hot topic of the law.
And that is next week, Minnesota Law, each and every Saturday at noon. Tom, enjoy the day.
Hey, thanks so much, Steve. You too.
Marcy, thanks again. Good to see you. Marcy Frost, once again, Tom Schroyer in studio from Lawless & Barnett. Quirks of Minnesota Employment Law will be available online at moss-barnett.com and at 830wcco.com if you missed a portion of the program today. Once again, it will be available on demand at our website a little bit later in the weekend. We'll certainly let you know when it is available. We have the news and weather next. We'll talk to you next Saturday here on Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett on 830 WCCO.